Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tribal Wisdom by Bridal Tribe. I am your host, Cynthia Williamson, and happy Wedding Wednesday. We are back again for another hour talking with some lovely couples about maintaining a happy marriage. We are aware that tonight is a presidential debate, and a lot of our listeners are probably going to be focused and tuned into that, but we are very happy that you'll be able to listen to the show in the archives, so we welcome you to do that. Tonight we're going to be talking with Dr. A.J. Reed and Mrs. Sharita Reed about their bonding period during marriage in the military. If you didn't know, tonight's topic is marriage and the military, and we find this to be a very interesting topic, and it's actually a requested topic from many individuals. So I think it's going to end up being a series, but tonight we're going to be talking just about the bonding period, and we want to welcome our couple tonight. In fact, let's just bring them in right now. Hi, guys.
Howdy.
Hi, Cynthia. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Mrs. Reed?
I'm wonderful.
Wonderful, wonderful. I just want to give the number out to those of you who may want to call in. The number is 347-996-3160. If you want to make a comment or if you have a question for the couple, be sure to press the number 1, and that will let us know that you want to come in and speak with us. Other than that, you can just take a listen. You can also join us on Facebook inside the event Marriage in the Military. If you have any questions, just post them there, and I'm happy to pass them along to the couple. So let's get right down to it. Guys, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. Tell us about how you met, how long you've been married, and let's start there.
I'm going to go first. Okay, she's pointing to
me. Oh, no, I can. It's totally fine. So we're in different rooms. I'm in the kitchen.
I love it when couples do this because it's so cute. And they don't know how cute it comes across when we listen to the radio later on.
Well, we met in October 16th in 2000. Mm-hmm. And we got engaged pretty soon after that.
She couldn't resist me.
Oh God! Now, Cynthia, I told you that he was really funny, right? So,
yes.
This is only the beginning. So, just get ready.
I'm putting my seatbelt on. Go ahead.
So, yeah, within the first year of us being together, we were engaged, and I became pregnant with our son. Mm-hmm. We were living together pretty much our first year, and everything, you know, everything was, you know, I mean, of course, nothing, you know, no relationships are easy, and we had our ups and downs and stuff, and, you know, but about a year and a half after that, he decided to join the military. Our son was about 3 months old, about 3 or 4 months old.
I'm sorry, before you got married, or this is after the marriage now?
Our son was born before our wedding date.
Okay, go on.
So we decided, you know, we're going to go ahead, you know, keep our wedding. We didn't want to, you know, rush it and bump the date up. It was like, no, we already had it planned.
Right.
So we had our son February 2002. Mm-hmm. Our wedding was planned for June 2002, mm-hmm. you know, later that year and everything. During that time, that's when this whole military thing came up. And he knows. I didn't, you know, I was like, oh, no. I don't like that. I don't like that idea. You know, you're going to get deployed. You know, I was so, I was scared. I was worried, you know, of course, that he was going to go to Iraq. This was, of course, soon after September 11th and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I definitely was not thrilled with the idea. So, yeah, we kept our date and everything. We got married June 5th, 2002,
mm-hmm.
and we got to spend maybe a few days together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a few days, and then he was gone. He was off to, you know, to basic training and everything. So let's say that June, like June 8th,
mm-hmm.
he was gone. We didn't see each other again until the end of August.
Well, hold on now. How long between the amount of time that you signed up did pass before you actually had to leave?
Well, it was, every situation is different. And even before we get deeper into this, and to the listeners out there, just realize that our situation is atypical. So let's not, you know, confuse people and think that every situation is going to be like.
Right, right.
Every situation across, now there are some things that's going to always happen. Our situation, for the most part, was, it was atypical.
Mm-hmm.
My recruiter, he actually recruited me on campus. I was at Morris Brown in Atlanta. I played baseball there. And recruiters are the devil. That's paid to do it. I mean, if their mouths are moving, they're lying. And because I don't remember the brother's name, I can talk about the dirty stuff he did. Like, some of the stuff he did would get him thrown under the jail. He gave me money. He let me drive his car. And the whole time, he was still lying to me. He said...
Wow.
He was lying big time. But he said that, you know, he said basically everything you're doing in college right now, you can do in the military. Mm-hmm. To the listeners out there, there's a big difference between can and will. And mm-hmm. you'll probably hear me say that a lot. There's a huge difference between can and will. Mm-hmm. Can you go to the moon? Yeah, you can. But last time I checked, I'm still here. So there's a huge difference between can and will. And he's like, because I play baseball. So he was like, you can play for the Army baseball team. I'm like, cool. He's like, you can be a doctor. And I'm like, cool.
Right.
I shot ball with this brother. He gave me money. I'm like, this brother is cool. He lied on every facet.
Wow.
And that's what they get to do. So let's say I met him February of 02.
Mm-hmm.
I met him March on campus. I met him March of 02, actually signed documents in April, and it all depends on your job when you leave because they have certain classes, so your
mm-hmm.
classes have to line up with one another.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, sometimes it might take you 6 months before you leave. Sometimes you might leave in a week.
Mm.
So it all depends on what you sign up, and a lot of what I'm going to say, every situation depend on where you are, what's your rank, what you do, the situation that's going on internationally. There's so many factors and facets that occur. So every situation
right.
is different. But the nucleus remains mm-hmm. the same.
Okay.
And the nucleus of crap that you'll deal with, it doesn't matter what branch, from the Coast Guard to the Flower Guard, it don't matter. If you if you raise your right hand, you are property of.
Ooh.
And it doesn't matter all the way. You could be the Surgeon General. You are still property of. If
all right,
you get a suntan, if you get a sunburn, they can get you. Straight
all right,
up.
So we're going to definitely touch on that because I know that's going to be probably a very sensitive issue for a lot of people. They don't realize that when they're signing up that they're really, like, what people always say, oh, let me just go ahead and sign my life away. They don't realize how literal that is sometimes. But you're going to tell us about how long before when you signed up to when you had to leave.
Well, it was about 3 months. It was
okay.
It was based, and you know, I kind of shuffled my feet a little bit, but it was based off of my school schedule
mm-hmm.
and what they had available.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, basic training, then you have your training school that comes right after basic training. So they have to coincide. So you just can't sign up on Monday and leave on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
It's based off of each and every individual class and what they have available.
Right.
Even with the need, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
because
they don't want you sitting around doing nothing.
Of course.
And if you sign up and you don't have a class that's available, you could literally sit around for 2 months collecting a check.
Oh, yeah, they don't want that.
No. They got to get something out of you.
Well,
you got to earn that money. You got to sweep some floors and something. Somebody got to take this trash out.
Right. So now you signed up to join them. You weren't in the reserves or anything.
Active duty. Because
okay.
the recruiter told me, he said, you can become a doctor through the Army. So I was like, cool. And I signed up based off of what he told me I could do. He said, just once you get in, you fill out this form, you fill out that form, you fill out this form. And I didn't realize how much it took an act of Congress to actually get those forms out. So being green and not knowing, I signed up in April. I shipped in June, finished basic training, got down to my second training school, presented them with the forms they told me that I had to fill out, and it wasn't like they said. So you don't just leave as soon as you decide. You know, it's not like it was during World War II or Vietnam where you get on the bus the next day.
Ooh, okay.
It's not like that.
Right. Well, you know, of course, back then it was crucial, so they had to leave. They made sure everybody left right away.
Man, they picked up cats off the side of the road. Are you doing anything? Man, we got this free trip, man. We trying to send some man, food free. We pay you, too. It's like how they got the slaves over here. You say free, people sign up for stuff, man.
You know what?
I know. We're going to have to get him. But, okay, so now you signed up within a couple of months. You had to leave. And you left a couple of days after your wedding.
Right.
Talk to us about how you felt about that. You know, what was going through your mind at that time?
Well, I must say this, seeing that I teach neurology, so there's a difference between how men approach things and women. It's not to be sexist. It's just neurologically based.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking more type A. This is all business. I have and I've always been about the business of taking care of my family.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to put my emotions to the side. I'm like, right now I can't think emotion. I was like, basically, it's kind of like how your mom tell you back in the day you're going to get a whooping when you get home.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, you know what, pull the car over right now and just beat me now because that's a 30-minute trip. So for me, I'm like, look, let's go ahead and get this beat down over with.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't thinking about the fact that I just got married, you know, 15 hours ago or anything like that. You know, I couldn't think about, my children or anything like that. Only thing that I could think about was I got a job to do. Because if I got overly emotional, especially in the beginning, I wouldn't be focused.
Right.
And when you have an M16 in your hand or a grenade in your hand, which I was an expert in, you need to be focused.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. You got to be focused when you got bombs and stuff like that. And
right.
The fact that I'm a medic, you know, that I took care of people's lives. Basically, you know, I was the doctor on the battlefield. So somebody gets shot, you know, I can't be thinking about who I miss. Not right then, or maybe on a trip back, but I needed to focus. So I wasn't emotional at all.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
Maybe it may have come off as, you know, I was kind of apathetic or anything like that, but I had to focus on taking care of them. And as long as everything was lined up and perfect, that's the only thing I was concerned about. I kind of took on a kind of a Christ complex. I was willing to get beat down to make sure that they was taken care of. So that's how I felt.
Mm.
I can't speak for everybody else.
Right, now we're going to get to everybody else right now.
See, for me, totally, total opposite. I was just a ball of mush. I was, oh, my God, you know, I was just falling to pieces. I was sad and, you know what I mean? Just like, you know, I'm thinking, oh, we just got married. Like, we doing this thing right. It's official now and, okay, now, you know, he's gone, so... And I was like, okay, that's kind of that. But, you know, for me, like I said, it wasn't like, okay, well, he's off, you know, handling business. It wasn't like that. You know, it was totally emotional. I was a mess, you know, especially in the beginning. Those first few weeks, you know, I definitely was a mess.
Right.
As time went on, during the, let's say the first, when he was in basic training, as time went on, I started to learn, you know, okay, well, what can I do? You know, in the meantime, I started learning more about, you know, legal things and, you know, that I can go ahead and get done and set in place. In the meantime, one of the most important things I will tell anybody is, especially if you're the spouse that's not in the military, get a power of attorney. I found out, you know, about that it was, you know, that how easy it was to get it done, and I was able to handle a lot. I handled everything, you know, all, you know, bills and getting this transferred and getting this turned on and set up. I had to, you know, handle my end as far as business. You know, he was off, and he was handling business on that end. I had to do every, you know, the stuff that was going on right there.
Okay, what was that? I mean, let's be clear, because anybody who's getting married, they need to know what kind of business you were taking care of.
Yeah, once I got the power of attorney, I was able to get a lease for an apartment with, you know, with his name on it. Of course, he's a military person, so they waived a lot of things. They waived certain deposits and things like that, so I was able to handle that without him being there. Normally, they wanted to see the soldier there with his military ID, and he had to sign this form. And there was a a whole stack of stuff that needed his signature on it.
Mm-hmm. But because you had power of attorney, you were able to
take
care of it.
Because I had power of attorney, they were able to, they made it, they would, everywhere I went, they would make a copy of it and staple it to the form, and I would sign, and they gave me permission to basically be him.
Okay, so briefly tell us how you got your power of attorney, just in case someone doesn't know.
Oh, wow, that was so long ago. I
know that it's something that you can put up. You know what, if I find it, what I'll do is
I'll
just post it up.
Yeah, it was actually really, really simple.
You can print it up and
just...
It has to be signed in front of a notary or something like that.
Right, yep.
Mm-hmm.
It really, like I said, it really took me, like, total time, you know, just as far as getting around and getting it done. I want to say it took me about a week.
Okay.
We kind of had a heads up on his duty station was going to be in Texas. I was in Missouri. Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, well, I'm going to see, you know, what I can do. I had family here in Texas, and I said, well, I'm going to have them look around for me as far as an apartment and kind of let me know, you know, how things go. I moved in with family in Texas, and I went around. I found an apartment, and I used that power of attorney. I got a lease.
Mm-hmm.
A lease agreement done for an apartment. I got all the utilities turned on, and they waived everything just about because he was military.
Mm-hmm.
And because only because I had the power of attorney, and they let me act as him without him being present.
Okay.
So that was super duper important because, I mean, let's say, you know, legally something had gone wrong, I couldn't have done anything about it without that piece of paper. I was able to go to the grocery store and use his credit card and sign my name without having to show ID or anything, and I would just flash the paper. They was like, oh, okay, we sorry, ma'am.
Okay.
You know,
all right.
Go ahead.
All right. So
you know what I mean?
So for our listeners, let's just go ahead. See, they are definitely recommending that if this is something that you are planning on doing, then you want to get a power of attorney to be able to handle business if your spouse is leaving and going away. Just make your life a little easier by checking into what paperwork you would need to have in order to take care of business while your spouse is away.
Right. I think... I was able to do quite a bit. I was actually able to handle, you know, we were trying to get things together with our credit at the time. And, you know, most times you call about someone's credit, you know, they're like, okay, I need to talk to that person. I was able to handle pretty much everything. I had to fax in the power of attorney, you know, just so they could see it. And basically it was as if he was standing there and he wasn't.
Right. And now this is during, like, you guys were apart during this time for about 4 or 5 months. How long were you apart to be able to handle this?
Babe, how long was basic training was what, 6 weeks, 8 weeks?
16 weeks.
I'm sorry, 16 weeks. So
that's 4 months,
Yeah. So, I mean, during that time, I secured an apartment. I got all utilities on. I was fixing credit, you know, and everything, you know, getting this set up and that set up. I was able to...
You're just trying to set up home. You're trying to set up home life.
Right.
So
that
when
you know,
because
a lot of times when you are just getting stationed somewhere, they move your, if you wait, you know, they'll move your family there. And they were saying we would have to stay in like temporary housing, you know, until we did that. And then we had to scramble to find a place. And I didn't want to have to do that. I said, well, if I can get this done ahead of time and, you know, not just settle and, you know, kind of get things in a better position where it's not a rush.
Right, especially since you had your baby, too. Plus, you had your child, so you definitely didn't want to just...
Right. At that time, our son, he was in between 4 and 6 months, you know, during that time when Jay was in basic training. So, yeah, I was trying to, like, get a jump on it and everything so we wouldn't have all that extra, you know, rush and stress and everything as far as trying to figure out where in the world we're going to live and not have to stay in the temporary housing on the base. I just didn't want to do that.
I understand. And then, of course, like you said, your baby's, 3 or 4 months at this point, so your hormones are still settling. I mean, there's a whole lot still going on with you.
Yeah.
With this whole new family.
All right, and I'm sure that added to, like I said, I was really emotional in the beginning when he first left. I'm sure, you know, me having just had a baby, that really didn't help any at all. So.
All right, so now Jay comes home.
Mm-hmm.
You're still setting up house. Let's talk about the bonding period because normally, of course, for most marriages, you get married and you spend those first few months together living, you know, as man and wife and bonding together. Yours was a little different. You know, he had to leave, and now he's come back into the situation after basic training at that. What was this period like for the both of you? Either one can start.
It was difficult. Like I said, when Jamie was talking about the different things that were told to him about, you know, options, and once he got in, and you could do this, you can do that. And when while he was training, he found out those things were not true, not even close. Mm-hmm. And so, he was stressed out. I mean, he was relieved. So, okay, we're finally a family, like together, like under the same roof and everything. And it was kind of a, you know, we took a breath, and then it was, okay, you know, back, you know, I got to go to work, We had, you know, the stress of trying to get a vehicle. We're in a new state. I had a little bit of family, but not, you know, a whole lot that was, you know, right there that you know, we could depend on every day, of course. Mm-hmm. So, we were trying to get a vehicle. We're trying to, you know, just handle, you know, just life, you know.
Right,
how are we going to do this? Where's this? We don't know where this is. We're new to this, you know, to this city.
Oh, wow.
And,
okay. Yeah, I forgot
you
have to now try to get used to a
right.
whole new city.
Right.
And
you know, we didn't really know where things were. And, you know, we're having to get a ride here. You figure this out. How are we going to do this? How are we going to get over here? And at the same time, you know, he's got to get up super duper early in the morning and get on that base and go to work. And
super duper early, because that already hurt me when you said super duper.
Yeah, Jay knows.
Well, let me explain super duper early.
To me, I'm not a morning person, so.
Okay, me getting up super duper early is even early for early folks. Right after September 11th, we had what's called 100% accountability. So basically every car that stops have to show their ID going through the gate. And then they also have a random inspection where they'll make a car randomly. They'll pull you over. They basically make you empty everything out of your car, the dogs, the whole nine. So, just your luck, you run it late, and then they pull you over for the random inspection.
So that means that you have to prepare for that.
Yeah,
right.
So always in the back of your mind, you have to prepare. And on a military basis, the speed limit goes from 25 to 30 miles an hour. And their MPs posted up everywhere. So, you know, running late for work is a really big deal, because it's not like your civilian jobs. If you late, it's a huge deal in the military, especially if you're a lower-ranking person. So I was leaving home every day at 4:15.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I was leaving home. Plus, my job started at 5:30. So we opened up because we provided health care for soldiers who sick, you know, athlete's foot, you know, from minor stuff to major stuff. So I provided care for soldiers before they did PT. And, so, you know, then doing that lasted till about 9 o'clock. So there were days, my day started at 4:15 in the morning, and they didn't end till midnight. Now, that wasn't typical, but every time I went to work, I had to be prepared for that.
Right.
And how did you handle, I mean, again, this is the beginning of your marriage. How are you doing this? You know, I mean, what was on your mind? What was in your heart? How is it when you look back at it now?
It
what
sucks.
Do you say about it? Oh,
it sucks. It wasn't nothing good about it. I mean, and it was a pruning period, and it was a growth period.
Mm-hmm.
Now, coming from the south side of Atlanta, I wasn't really afraid to die, because I'm used to getting shot at, so it wasn't no
Lord.
Deal. You know, I was just at home. I heard gunshots. I just did what I normally did. It ain't no big deal. Oh, they shoot.
See, now you know all my Atlanta listeners are going to be like, what?
Come on, if you know anything about MLK, you know what I'm talking about. Outside, stand up. What? SWAT's in the house. You know what I'm saying? I spent time in D.C. I spent time in Bridgeport. I spent time in Newark, and I spent time in Detroit. So, you know, to all my people over there by King High in Detroit, you know what's up. You know what it's like to get shot at. Even if you ain't getting shot at, you getting shot at. You know what time to do it. So low crawling, the Army didn't have to teach me how to low crawl. I've been low crawling since I started crawling. You know, they've been shoot up a nursery. They don't play.
Let's get back on topic.
It sucked. It really did, because, you know, again, our focuses are different. And one of the things that I would say to any married couple, especially in the beginning, is that you have to have a common goal. You have to have a common focus. And even having a common focus, you're still going to have different focuses because I'm the soldier, you're not. Mm-hmm. And we both have different roles. So no matter how much on page that you are, you have to try to make your pages kind of sync with one another. My thing was, don't die.
Well, yes.
You know,
yes.
I mean, it's, and people don't realize the stress that comes because I'm like literally, because when I got my deployment orders, I felt like I was going to die. I really did. And because of the unit, the type of unit I was in, now if I was a secretary, I'd probably been straight, but I'm a medic. So when you're a medic, whatever unit you're in, you do what they do until something happened to somebody for the most part.
And
so
this is what
that
was on your mind.
Yeah, that was, I mean, and I kept it to myself. I never relayed that to my wife because the day that I got my deployment orders, we both sat down and said, we got something to tell each other. And she was like, you go first. So I was like, I'm getting deployed. She's like, I'm pregnant.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like the scene out of a sitcom or a movie or something where, you know, we're just sitting there blinking at each other. He's like, what? And I'm like, what? What did you just say? Yeah, same day I found out I was pregnant with our daughter. It was the same day he got his orders. And he told me that, and I was like, oh, no.
Okay, so now just to clarify to our listeners, this is not basic training he's talking about. This is now deployment. So he's already been home.
Yeah, this is Iraq. And
I've only been home, what, 2 months?
2 months.
Not even 2 months?
A little over 2 months, because he came home. It was like, say, right before Christmas, and I found out I was pregnant at the end of February. That five, you know. So, yeah, about 2.5 months that we've, you know, we're still learning each other as far as, you know, being a, you know, married, like, officially and in the same roof, you know, up under the, you know, the same roof, finally. And now he's telling me he's getting ready to go to Iraq. And I'm like, no, we're getting ready to have a baby. That's what's getting ready to happen. So, and we just kind of were at a loss, like, okay, now what? You know, we didn't have time to be, to wallow in it. We immediately started making plans. And that's, you know, that time that you get to kind of be emotional and everything, you don't get that. You know, when those situations come up, you have to immediately start making decisions. So we start thinking of, okay, well, I can go, you know, we can pack everything up. We can save this amount of money so we can pay for the stuff to get shipped back to Missouri. I can stay at my mom's. I'll have her do this. I had to call my mom and say, hey, I'm pregnant, but guess what? This is what I need you to do. So she's like, wait, hold on. I don't even get a chance to say, oh, my goodness, congratulations. I'm like, okay, yeah, let's bypass that. I need to come back about this time and this month, and I need you to do this, and she's like, wow, wait, slow down. So, you know, just that we just learned that at the end of the day, a lot of business stuff, you know, as far as getting things done and planning the military totally trumps all the emotional stuff. You don't have time for it. You have to be able to just think quick, make decisions, come up with a plan, and roll with it. So, you know, we didn't have time to be sad about it and all that. And, oh, what are we going to do? We're like, okay, so now what?
And that is important that you kind of get to feel out certain situations, especially since it's so new to you. It's not like you've been doing this for a long while, so it comes like second nature. Like you said, you're a new family, and now all of a sudden you don't even have the luxury of kind of going through the situation and feeling it out and then making decisions. You have to kind of bypass all emotions. Now, you're making plans. You're in Texas at this point, and now you're making plans to go back to Missouri?
Yes, we were talking about, you know, me going back, moving in, you know, moving back in with my mom. Let's put the furniture inside. We had just bought the furniture. Now we got to put the furniture in storage. We have to go price that. We have to figure out how much does this cost. And now I need a plane ticket. And you know, we didn't get a chance to say, "Aw." No, that that was like, okay, moving on. Now we have to figure out a plan. We have to figure out what to do because when the military gives you your date, you have to roll with the punches and work
and there's no other nothing
figure
to be said
that out.
About
you know, in the meantime, when they say this is the date, then that's the date.
Now, so, why are you going back to Missouri at this point? What was that kind of quick conversation about? Was this more about, like, your safety, or he just didn't want you to be alone?
It was more so about, support. And, of course, my mom would, is the first person that we thought of and everything that would, be there. And, all my family was in St. Louis. My mom, aunts, uncles, grandmother, my sisters, my brother, everybody was in St. Louis. And so we just figured, that would be the best as far as, me getting the support that I needed, going through the pregnancy and having the baby, because we already knew he wasn't going to be there,
And Jay, this is for your peace of mind, really, because you're away and you just wanted to know.
Well, that's kind of the typical thing. I mean, it's like you can kind of tell that soldiers got deployed because there's usually a mass exodus of families that just up and leave. So, Fort Hood, Texas is not only the largest military installation in the world, but it also has the most soldiers. So, we make up the city. And, when 4th ID went, I was in first cab. They went before we did, and there was just a mass exodus. So when in Rome, do what Romans do, and most people, especially if they're younger soldiers, they send their spouses home. Now, if they're established, like let's say, mom's a nurse or a principal of a school or something, they typically stay. But you usually see the spouses of older soldiers stay, and the younger soldiers go home because they don't have that support system that's there. Especially.
Okay.
Yeah, having so it was more typical than anything. We kind of follow suit, and it would have made sense. You don't want to without the resources and things
right.
of that nature. You don't want to be in a new city. You're still relatively brand new and go through the pregnancy
right.
and not have that. But I didn't go to Iraq. I actually got hurt in a training accident.
This is why you were still on U.S. soil that you got hurt.
Yeah. I threw a grenade and fell in a hole. I got the grenade off, but I shredded my knee for the second time in less than a year. And I separated my shoulder, but I hit my target though. I hit that.
Okay.
And I hit that bad boy smooth. But I walked it off. I didn't cry. I didn't cry either. I didn't cry.
I'm
walked
not even
going to
address
off.
The whole crying situation. Okay.
I mean, hey, when you hear body parts go snap, usually the first thing you want to do is cry. But I couldn't let nobody see me cry. I had to walk that one off.
Mm-hmm.
I really had to walk. I didn't cry when I got back to the hospital either. I had walked that one off. But, multiple surgeries here and there, and then they start talking about exploratory surgeries, and you never let anybody explore. Let's say that for Dora. So they basically said, have two more surgeries, rehab and go to Iraq, or get out and we'll pay you.
Okay.
So I took option B.
So you got out.
Yeah. But the process still took about 2 years. So, I still had a military career, but there's still things that deal, whether you're on this soil or over there or anywhere. The military is still the military, and there's still a lot of things that you have to deal with. And I don't know if we have the time. Maybe that's the part two of the series, but there's a lot. There's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot that you have to deal with,
mm-hmm.
and it varies. It all depends on where you are. Let's take the difference between Fort Hood, Texas, which is down 35, and then you go even further south down 35, another 2 hours to Fort Sam Houston. They're both about 2 hours apart, but they're night and day. You have a job at Fort Sam Houston, it's cush, and they treat you with respect. You go up north 35, 2 hours, and it's a cesspool.
Wow.
So same state. Same army, same rank, different treatment. So it all depends on. I mean, you can be in one station and have a great experience, and you can go to the next place and it can be a hellhole.
Was your experience great? Because I'm thinking that your experience had a lot to do with how you were at home.
Well, my experience was horrible. it was whatever's worse than horrible. It was that.
It was really bad for him, and I think in the beginning of any marriage you're learning how to communicate and things like that, and of course you're probably gonna do it wrong at first, and there was just a lot of stress that that he had that he like he was saying, it was stuff he just didn't tell me, things that he would, ways that he was feeling. He didn't want to, you know, put that on me, so he just kind of kept it to himself. But, I mean, it did affect, you know, him where he was more closed off, you know what I mean, kind of kept things bottled up and everything. And I was, you know, just kind of like, okay, what's going on with him? Of course, you see how he's telling jokes now. He was nowhere near, you know, close to his normal, you know, laughing, telling jokes kind of self. It was the total opposite.
Well, let's get into that just for a second, because at this point, the first question is, what did you know about being a husband, and what did you know about being a wife? One of the shows that we have is Marriage, Bonds, Boundaries, and Beliefs. And since we're kind of talking about the bonding period for you two, what beliefs did you come into your marriage with, and how did your experience as a military wife and husband either help or hinder?
Oh, let me go first.
I was going to let you go first.
The thing is that, again, my situation was atypical. So my life is a show, and it's my life is a movie. Some of the stuff that's happened to me before I met my wife would make a damn good Steven Spielberg movie.
We'll talk about that soon.
Yeah, it was that bad. So, I mean, but it plays a vital role into what I brought into the marriage.
Okay.
Everything I learned about marriage, I learned on TV. Pretty much everything about me, I learned on TV because, and my wife can attest to it, I pretty much raised myself.
Mm-hmm.
But in all the situations I went to, I took the best of everywhere I went, and kind of, instead of taking the worst of a situation, I would take the best of a situation and kind of like gumbo or some kind of souffle or whatever, and kind of formulate it into me. Mm-hmm. So I thought that, you know, you get into a marriage, you know, she always right, don't argue, just real textbook BS, you know. And I think the biggest problem I had early in my relationship, especially as a soldier, was I was so focused on not making her mad. And then one day I woke up and I said, well, I don't care if she get mad. So it was pretty much night and day, because I'm like, look, I got too much going on at the job to be worrying about whether she mad or not.
Right.
So in the beginning, I was very passive. And, you know, through some therapy I had, they was like, basically, your biggest mistake was not saying no. My answer to everything was, cool, I don't care, whatever, as long as she happy.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
As long as she happy. And I didn't realize that, you know, in marriage, because, you know, no one raised me, you can say no. And in some cases, you can say hell no. I didn't know that, because I was like, and I didn't realize marriage that, like, you just don't, she just can't break up with me. I thought she was going to be like, you know what, it's over. I want chicken, you want steak, we done, bro.
Wow.
You know, and that's how I walked on eggshells. I didn't want to make her mad. Then with all the deployment and all kind of stuff, I was like, man, I don't care if you mad. Do you? Because I'm going to do me.
Now, wait, what were some of the things? Because you're saying you didn't realize you could say no. You just, everything was yes, dear, and yes, yes, yes.
From purchasing something to whatever. I mean, like, there were times, like, in the beginning, like, I was exhausted. I mean, like, extremely exhausted. And, you know, she didn't have a driver's license. I barely just started learning how to drive myself. And there would be times that I would come home tired. You know, I've been gone 18 hours. And I would come home, and as soon, you know, she'd been locked up all day. She want to talk. She want to get out of the house. She probably wanted to take the baby out of the house, get some fresh air, whatever. And I'm like, I can't give her the keys and be like, you know, do you. So I got to take her to Walmart, which I think is Walmart's the devil. Stay away from Walmart. Anyway.
But you know what? We'll keep going.
Man, Walmart sucks. But so I got to deal with Walmart. You know what Walmart's like. And
yeah.
I want to be at the house.
Mm-hmm.
So at times I want to be like, you know, in my mind I want to say not no, but hell no.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, she been in the house all day. I'm tired. I mean, literally falling asleep at the wheel.
Wow.
Literally, I mean, like, it's, and that's not being a punk or nothing like that, but when you dealing with that level of stress, and it's very, very stressful dealing, the hardest part for me being a soldier, I'm an extrovert, and I'm the type of person, I believe in, you respect me, I'm going to respect you. I'm always going to respect you, but I'm not just going to sit there and let you disrespect me.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some little punks that's 5'4" on a good day, maybe 110 pounds, that got a little rank on their shoulders, and they think they can just talk to you any old kind of way. And you dealing with that. The United States military is the most racist organization in the entire world, period.
All right. Slow your roll. Don't...
No, here's the thing. I'm serious because this all is relative. All of this is relative.
Okay.
These are the things that I had to deal with and I brought home.
Oh.
It's all relative.
Gotcha.
So these are things I'm bringing home and I'm keeping it to myself. You know, I got this little bitty sergeant in my face, and not only that, but to them, where I say the racism and the class is a class divide and it's a race divide. The class divide is you a low enlisted soldier, you're nobody. So if there's something like they will make you do demeaning things just because of what was on your collar.
Wow.
You know, some people. You know, so you know, you got, and then one of the comments, well, two comments that I've had in the military was, you know, you're a soldier, you're a lower enlisted soldier, you're nobody. So they was like, you know, someone said, without the military, you would be nothing. Little did they know, I went to college before the Army.
Right.
And then once they found out that, you know, I went to college, I'm an alpha, I played college baseball. You know, I had a pretty impressive resume before the Army. Then they would always call me uppity. They wouldn't finish the statement, but they would call me uppity quite a bit. And I'm dealing with this stuff daily.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working in a field that's life or death, and I got people that's ranked above me that's killing folks or damn near killing folks. But because of my rank, I can't say anything. I can't call a sergeant first class out on something. I can't call a colonel out on something because he's using the wrong technique and he's going to kill somebody. I literally, because of my rank, I have to keep that to myself. Then
okay.
I go home.
All right. So let's go ahead and just put that right in order. Here you are. You're working hard for your family. You're in an environment that's stressful because of prejudices. Like you said, there's race and class divide. You're holding everything in. At the same time, you're learning to be a husband. So you're wound pretty tight.
Wound pretty tight is an understatement. that's a horrible understatement. The two outlets that I had in college while I was with my wife, I had two outlets that they were instantly taken away from me because of my environment in the military. I played baseball, so anytime I had stress, I just hit in the cage. There was nowhere to hit. So that was my physical outlet, and I'm also a trumpet player. There's nowhere to play. I'm really bound tight.
Okay.
Because I'm like, all right, what other outlet I'm going to have? I can't work out because we work out every day anyway, so that ain't it.
Right.
And you said,
you really don't want to upset her, so you're coming home, you're dealing with all of this, you're not talking to her about this, and you're also trying to meet her needs within this new city. She doesn't have a driver's license.
You know,
all of that is starting to kind of bottle up within you and sit hard on your shoulders.
Right. And again, like I said, this is atypical because I know some stories that's way better, and at the same time I know some stories that's way worse. But again, I say the blueprint for anybody that's listening is that you have to have a plan before you get in. You have to see 5, 6, 7 steps down the line, and these are mistakes that we made and a lot of soldiers make. You have to plan your pre-career, your career, and your post-career. All of that is relative. It will save you so much stress. You have the uncomfortable things, you have to talk about them. You have to talk about the possibility of death.
Right. Who do you have to talk to? Because when you're saying that, I mean, because, you know, we're talking about being a husband and being a wife on this show. So when you're saying the uncomfortable things that need to be talked about, who do they need to be talking to about these things?
Well, I'm saying to each other, the actual couple itself, you got to talk about those things that's uncomfortable. There's a lot of things. I mean, like death. Death is uncomfortable. That's that thing that no one wants to talk about. I mean, death is real. Death is very real. I lost my entire squad in Iraq by a roadside bomb. If I didn't hurt my knee, I wouldn't be here. Period.
Wow.
You know, so, I mean, God had a different plan. But those are things that you need to talk about. Mm-hmm. You don't want to talk about them, but you need to talk about them. You need to talk about how you're going to raise the kids. Mm-hmm. The kids got to be on it. Now, our kids were young. Now, if we had an older couple on here, certain problems we had because we was young, but they're different phases and stages. So you got a guy that's been in 15, 20 years, they got a different set of problems because now they got kids with personalities. Mm-hmm. And there are certain rules that are supposed to be in effect. You know, daddy go to Iraq for 18 months. You know, these kids going to run wild.
Right.
And that's like the number one problem that a lot of older soldiers have. So there's so many different situations, so many different scenarios. But the family, if you have older kids, then it's in the whole family. If you have younger kids, then it's the husband and wife. You have to have a plan. You have to have a plan. You have to have a plan. You have to have an exit strategy. That is of paramount importance.
So
because
let me just stop you there for a minute. I hate to interrupt you because what you're saying is so pertinent. Because the individuals that asked for this type of show, they was like, please let me know when you're doing a show about marriage in the military because my sweetheart and I are talking about getting married. And, you know, we don't know, you know, how if we should or if we should wait. If for people who are now discussing getting married and one is in the military and one is not, let's say specifically again, what are the things that they need to talk about before they take this step?
Well, before they talk, everything that I just said, you have to have a pre-plan. You have to have you need to talk about the length of your service. If you're an officer, you have to sign a 6-year commitment.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems with being an officer is needs of the military. That's a big one. The needs of the military. So you can plan to do a 20-year career, which would be very financially stable. I mean, a lot of fringe benefits to that. But if your particular field, if they don't need you at any moment, they can basically kick you out. So if you are an officer, a young officer, that's something that you guys have to plan for. So just in case we do 14 years, because 20 years you get retirement and you get half of your pay for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what most people strive for. But at the 14-year mark, you have to have a backup plan.
Mm-hmm.
So those are for officers. For soldier, for enlisted personnel, they do 4-year enlistments.
Mm-hmm.
And you know you have to talk about from day one whether or not you're going to say, are we going to go for 20, or are we going to go for 8? Okay, what's our exit strategy? How are we going to attack? Are we going to try to buy property? There's so many things that people don't talk about. They just go through the motions. And then when stuff come up, they're trying to scramble. And then at the same time, you're still property of the military. So, okay, what kind of career are you going to work? Now, with this particular career, you know, there are certain careers that, like, let's say you want to go Special Forces or you want to be a Ranger. You get ranked faster. So, yeah, you're getting paid more, but that means you're going to go more. So those are the things you have to talk about. All right, is it the rank that's important or is it the money that's important?
And you know, these are the things you're saying that they should talk about to their spouse, you know.
Right now,
attendant.
you need to have an entrance plan, a plan while you're in, and a plan to get out.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest problems that soldiers have, where and in some cases it gets so bad you see guys on the corner of the on a street corner, is their exit strategy.
Mm-hmm.
If you got a guy who was in the Army for 8 years as an infantry guy, he basically, you know, shoot people. All right. There's only so many jobs. You have to pick a career that kind of parallels to what you did in the Army. Now, if you do legal in the military, you can do legal when you get out. If you do medical in the Army, you do medical when you get out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a tanker, you know, if you drive tanks for a living, it ain't people driving tanks up and down MLK.
Yeah, you know, that would be fun, though, but you know, you're right.
You know,
I'm just saying. I would have a good time with that.
That is a major problem. So when people get out, it's like, now what?
Yeah.
Pimp the system. You must pimp the system. I'm so sick because when you're property of, if you ever ask a soldier how much they make an hour, they'll basically take whatever they say and then divide it by 24 hours because you're on call 24 hours a day. If they want to call you in at 2 o'clock in the morning and you just got off at 1, they can do that.
Wow.
So it's real.
Yeah.
So you
Let's
have to
just
have.
Let's take that there right now. People waiting.
Yeah,
you
I think that's one of the things that, you know, that a lot of people are not not prepared for, that what I needed as the spouse was not the priority. Whatever they needed him to do, regardless of what time it was or how late he had to stay or how early he had to get up, that was the priority. And the person who is not, you know, military has to just kind of, I don't want to say just accept it, but you have to be prepared for that. You're going to be frustrated. You may be annoyed with it. You may say, oh, that's not fair, but that's the way the ball bounces. So that having that understanding of, hey, if they say, well, this is where I have to go or this is what I need to do, you know, then you kind of have to roll with that. You know, I had other family and friends who were military spouses, and one, you know, her husband was gone for 3 months, and, you know, they had a baby, you know, a newborn, and she had to deal with that, having that newborn, you know, by herself for 3 months while he was gone, and then he was back. And then the next year he had to go away again for another 3 months. So, you know, it's just one of those, it's not really you choosing, okay, well, I'm going to do this. If something comes up, you know, like with us, it was right after September 11th. You know, when they were, you know, doing all these things, they're going to Afghanistan, they're going here, they're going there, you know, whatever decisions are made, you know, saying, you know, they're counting you, you know, as a soldier to be there in those numbers. Mm-hmm. So what all the, you know, a lot of the personal feelings you may have, well, I want you to be here. Well, it's really not about what you want, it's what they need him to do. So if, I mean, even, you know, he didn't get deployed, but there were a lot of days he had to work 7 days a week, and he was gone all day during those 7 days a week, and that was I have no control over it, and neither does he. He can't just clock out, you know, swipe that card, clock out, and leave and go home and say, I'm done. It's 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. No, if they say, well, this is the task, none of you can leave until you go home. If that thing doesn't get done until 10:30 p.m. and you've been there since 5:30, guess what? You're not going to leave until it gets done.
Wow. Wow. So let's make it clear that you do not belong to yourself when you are in the military. And if you are the spouse of someone in the military, you need to understand that they do not belong to you first. In an average marriage, you belong to each other, but he belongs or she belongs to the military.
Well, let me say something, because you know, the military, just like the world, goes in cycles, and there are periods of time where the military can be very beneficial to you. You can really do really well in the military, so it's not all bad. Mm-hmm. A lot of who I am as a doctor, as a professor, a lot of the skills that I have, I obtained from the military. Something I said the last time I spoke was pimp the system. You can really set yourself up for success for the future. Give you an example. My first degree, because I'm still in school now, my first doctorate, I got $150,000 worth of education I didn't pay a dime for. Mm-hmm. All right, this second one is probably about another $150,000 worth of education I'm still not paying a dime for. Mm-hmm. And they're paying me to go. You know, so if you play your cards right, you can get, depending on how long you're in, you can get probably up to a master's degree while you're in the service. Then you can get out. If you want to get a doctorate, they'll pay you to go.
Well, you know what, then let's talk about the support system for something like that, because everything that you're saying right now, and I'm glad that you're saying it, and for the individuals that are listening, they're grateful. But is there something like this where they get to talk to someone? Because I know you said your recruiter was just the devil, but is there a place where they can get this kind of information about what they can do and how they should do it, and, you know, how to make a plan while you're in the Army? I mean, if you're not an Army person, coming from a military family, you may not know.
Mm-hmm. What I would suggest is if there are people who are interested, and you can't talk to everybody because everyone's motivation is different.
Right.
I've known some guys that they were about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, when they talk about how good the military is, I mean, the military is good to them because it was about them. You
mm-hmm.
know, they got the rank, the prestige, all that stuff was about them. They had families, but they were still selfish, self-centered Baptists. So that's not the person that you want to talk to,
mm-hmm.
you know, but at the same time, you know, so you got to pick and choose and kind of weed out who you want to talk to. You need
mm-hmm.
someone that's unbiased and that's going to be real with you. And I would say you probably want to see someone who has a successful military career and who's married. You know, you don't want to ask people about marriage advice who's been married 3-4 times in the military. You definitely don't want to talk to a person who's been deployed 15 times. Because even if it, and I'm serious, like you take like a special forces soldier, like right now, they spent more time over there than they spent over here. So can they really tell you about marriage? They really can't because they're gone most of the time. So I would say you probably want to talk to somebody who's, you know, maybe a recruiter. Oh, no, don't talk to him. You probably want to talk. You want to talk to someone who has now they're extending stays. In the past, like every 2 years, you're going somewhere else. Now, because of stability, and they kicked out a lot of checks to soldiers to move. So they're trying to. That's one of the ways they're cutting down with checks, and they're trying to get with continuity. So you know, talk to a soldier who's been somewhere 6 years. All else fails, you can go to the DAV. You go to like some of these veterans clubs. Order the Purple Heart and talk to some of the vets and try to see. You know, this is a career move. I don't think people really realize that. Becoming, for me as a soldier, everything was personal. I was all about me at work. Everything that could benefit me because they were all about them. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, if you trying to pimp me, why I can't pimp you?
Right.
We all just been pimping since been pimping since been pimping. Why not? Everybody here trying to pimp. You got a pimp cup, I got a pimp cup. You trying to fill yours up, I'm trying to fill mine up. And I'm serious when I say this. Because a lot of people, they don't, one, you don't know. Two, you don't ask questions.
Right.
You don't, and people don't ask questions. And three,
a lot of the stuff we learned wasn't stuff that was just handed to us in the beginning. It's stuff
that
we found out, you know, over time. And stuff we found out after the fact, you know, when it was too late. You know, but we learned that at the end of the day, the military is, you have to look at it as business. You have to kind of numb yourself to a lot of the emotional things that, you know, would normally accompany, you know, a relationship or a marriage. You know, you can't really dwell on certain things. You have to be, you know, you have to look at it as a business move, period.
Well, how do you do that and not bring that into the marriage? Before you answer that, let me just say we're coming down to the last 5 minutes, and clearly we're going to go over time, like we always do. You know, that's never like not usual. We normally go over the time because the conversations get so good. But if you're listening in, if you just want to listen in, when the show cuts off, you will not be able to hear us if you're listening in on the computer. So if you want to listen in on your phone, be sure to call the number 347-996-3160, and you will be able to hear the entire show. If you get cut off before calling in, just know that you'll be able to hear it on the archives and you'll be safe. But back to what you were saying, you said that you have to kind of put all that emotional stuff aside. How do you, it's like a duality happening here. How do you do that?
Yeah,
it is.
I mean, it was. Right. It was really, really tough. I mean, it did cause, you know, us to, you know, have issues and things like that, you know, with each other because, you know, he's saying, you know, he's talking about, you know, how much he dealt with, how stressed he was, and he didn't want to bring that to me. I'm stressed. I'm like, you know, okay, you know, he's different. He's not, you know, he didn't really verbalize those things, but there was a change, you know, in, you know, behavior where, you know, like I said, he wasn't, you know, himself. So, of course, communication was important.
Yes.
At the top of the list, because we had to really understand, you know, okay, I need to know what's going on with him, and he needs to know what's going on with me, because now, you know, I'm like, okay, what's wrong with him? You know, I'm thinking, you know, he just, you know, as we say, tripping, or, you know, what's wrong with him, and really, he's stressed out. He's got this going on. He's got that going on. And, you know, we weren't communicating those, you know, those kind of things. So I think, you know, you keep a good open line of communication. Make sure that you're talking. I had one lady, she was a military wife. She was much older. She was actually the pastor of the church that we had joined at that time, and she was saying, you know, you got to, you know, talk about things every day. And this one thing she told me, we did this for a while when, you know, we were really, really, things were really, really tough between us. She was saying, you know, every day before you go, you know, every night before you go to bed, just say, hey, is there anything you want to talk about? Just out of the blue. Don't, you know, wait for, you know, them to say something, say, hey, you know, anything you want to talk about?
Mm-hmm.
Anything,
mm-hmm.
anything you want to, you know, you have, you want to tell me or anything, you know, going on or is everything good or,
mm-hmm.
you know, like that to just, you got, we kind of have to force those doors of communication open just to clear the air and say, well, you know what, when you said that to me earlier, you know, I feel disrespected or, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't like that or this hurt my feelings. Because you can wait until, you know, he's totally stressed out or, you know, whoever, if the spouse is, you know, male or female, wait till they're totally stressed out because of the extra stress that are added on with, you know, with being in the military, whatever their job may be, if it's one of those types. If they have orders to go somewhere and they're, you know, they kind of have that on their mind, it just, it adds a different element where you don't really have time to, you know, to be mad for a week. You know, we did those kind of things. You know, we're mad for this long time and that kind of time. We just learned, you know what, we don't have time for that. We just don't.
Wow.
We need to, you know, let's talk about it now. And, I mean, of course, for us, you know, we wish we had learned that earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
Because the stress was all, the tension, it was already there by that time. But yeah, I mean, communicating a lot. You know, during those times when everything is okay,
mm-hmm.
not when everything is not okay. Communicating
okay.
when things are okay. There were times, you know, like, you know, I could tell, you know, something was going on, you know, with him as far as emotions and stuff like that, or, you know, well, stress. And if we're having a good day, you know, it's a Saturday. He's finally got a Saturday off. We're enjoying the day. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to talk about what went wrong on Tuesday. You know, what we stressed about on Tuesday. I just, you know, and that's just one of them tough decisions you have to make. Is it that big? Is it that important where we have to talk about it right now? Or is this something that's not really that big and I can let that go? So I had to pick and choose a lot. How they say pick and choose your battles. You
mm-hmm.
have to do that a lot more because you don't have that time to waste.
Mm.
So it was, okay, do I really, you know, this is bothering me. Do I really need want to bring this up? We're finally just, we have nowhere to go. It's a Saturday. He's not at, you know, he's not on the base, and we're just here enjoying each other. Can I let that go?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I need to talk about that? You know, so you, and there's no, you know, protocol. It's just kind of one of those, you have to assess the situations as they come.
All right,
and
you
decide.
Know what?
Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. and, you know, decide what's worth it and what's not.
That's, then let's just say again, what you basically said was keep an open line of communication and make time
mm-hmm.
to talk to one another. So that's definitely
yeah.
going to be one of the points that I'm going to put up on Facebook as to a piece of advice that you're giving. Because it's like, you know, I guess within a military marriage, because of the amount of uncertainty of how much
yeah.
time that you're going to be spending together, You really do have to make the rules, like he said, you have to plan your pre, during, and post
mm-hmm.
everything, not just your career, but even your relationship has to be, you know, just full of love, but of a lot of understanding and planning.
A very tight schedule, and
yeah.
even to this day, my wife would joke with you, and I'm so serious when I do this. She'll say, "When will you be home?" And I'll say, "I'll be home in 27 minutes," and she's like, "You know, no one
like." Who says that? You say 20, 25, or 30. He's like, "I'll be home at 7:23. And I'm like, what? He's so, you know, and he got really precise like that when he was in the military. I thought that was the craziest thing. But if he can make it happen, if he says I'm going to be home at 7:23, he was going to be home at 7:23.
And you have to be that way, you know, and a lot of the things that I had in the military, I kind of apply to life now. You know, I know with school, now I use a lot of my military that I know that it takes me X amount of hours to be totally prepared. I know that I have small children. I know I have a wife. I know I have to eat. I know I have to work out. I know that it takes me a certain amount of time to have a good workout. I know a certain the kids need this. She needs that. So you have to I literally plan out my weeks, my months, quarters. I need to do this quarter. I need to do this week. I know that, you know, I'm going to give her 2 hours. I'm going to give them an hour apiece or whatever. You have to plan. It has to be that. And it's much, much, much tighter when you're in the military,
mm-hmm.
especially when you're under deployment orders or, you know, you don't know when you're going. Or even if you're back on garrison, which means back home, is that they would flip with us. So we had the largest unit, and then the other unit that was there. So we'll go for a year, and then we'll come back, and then they'll go for a year. So if you're here for a year, you need to take full advantage of that year as far as that FaceTime and talk about stuff. And, again, with the planning, you have to, because you're not going to be in the military forever, regardless of whether you retire or anything. And to avoid future fights and future financial futilities and things of that nature, you have to plan out every step. Now, there'll be amendments along the way, and there'll be things that change and, you know, change of mind, career paths to change, and that happens. But you still have to have a core nucleus that embodies you, God, your spouse, and you have a central core. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong. On the flip side, I know a couple, they were in the Air Force, but, you know, same thing. They planned out basically the plan that they're having right now. He has a practice that's down the street from us. He's been in practice for about 2 years now. But all the way back to his education was planned 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Every step that they were going to do, they went to Alaska. You get a little extra money for living in Alaska as a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. Everything was planned, the education, this step, that step, everything was planned way, 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 way beforehand. And
now you
have to do that. And he pimped the system. He pimped them for school, and they paid him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you got to, because you know what? When he was up serving up there, you don't think they pimped him? You know, so,
no,
you know,
I'm glad
you're
saying it. Whoever's listening, I think, especially the ones who are in, and I guess I'm dedicating this show to my niece, Ayanna Keys, because she just joined the Navy. She's a part of the Navy now. And she was the main one who really wanted to ask the questions or have the questions asked of you. Because she is thinking about getting married and all of this. And I'm like, wow, I know her to be a very a person that does plan well, but does she really know that she has to have everything this?
I think I'll say for her, well, specifically because she's female, I've seen it where it was a tougher situation when the female was the military person and they had to go away for longer periods of time, you know, typically how the house goes, you know, they're used to things being, you know, done or whatever. You know, your house has the woman, the feminine touch, and are there, you know, cooking and things like that. Those are, you know, typically, you know, things that the woman may do more, you know, as far as, you know, how often it's done. And, you know, I've seen it where it was much, much harder on the guy who was a civilian to have his wife gone, you know, and she's gone for 6 months, as opposed to, I mean, I don't know, I saw that firsthand where, you know, for the women, you know, a lot of them were stay-at-home moms anyway, you know, taking care of the kids and things like that. And it was more a natural thing. And it was, I mean, of course it can be done, but it was just harder for the guy to kind of, you know, cope with, you know, his wife just not, you know, not being there, you know, every day like he wanted. So, yeah, it was, I don't know. You can call it a double standard, I guess, but
I'm not going to call it anything except for, I mean, you guys have done it. You were right there living it. You've seen it. Double standard or not, it's real.
They had a harder time, you know, with, you know, just kind of that waiting that just, you know, when, I mean, I know firsthand as the person, of course, I was a civilian, the person who was in the military. So for me, I mean, for him, he was busy every day. He did more in one day than a lot of people do all week. You know, he did that in one day, probably before noon, you know. And for me, the days felt like they were lasting forever. Every day seemed long to me, super duper long. I felt like, you know, like I was just waiting for forever. He was quite busy. He did a billion things every day. So for me, it just dragged on, you know, and that's, you know, it's hard. You have to be really, really patient, and it's hard to, you know, wait and be, you know, you got to be understanding. You have to be really, really patient. I had to, you know, find things to do, hobbies and things like that, because I was kind of operating, you know, my day-to-day operations when he was not there, let's say when he was still in training. I was like, it was like I was single, but I wasn't, you know. We were married, but I was still, you know, I was by myself every day.
Right, right.
And I, you know, I still had to handle everything just like a single person knows that those bills are theirs and nobody else is going to do it but you. You know, nobody's going to pay this. You know, you can't say, hey, I don't feel like doing this. Can you go pick that up? You know, there's nobody's going to do it but you. You
now,
know,
that's
so.
That's an interesting perspective to come from because imagine that, you know, you're getting married because you fell in love and you want to be with this person and now you're living like a single person. That has to be another emotionally difficult thing
right.
to deal with.
And then for me, it was I don't know if Jamie has ever heard me say this, but it was tough for me to go to do that, to operate that way on my own. And then when he came home, I had to shut it off. That was tough.
Oh, I just saying it. I can. I'm like, oh my god.
Because you know, I mean, I handle bills and things like that, and I kept doing that. You know, even you know once he was there. You know, I still handle everything. I still, you know, paid stuff because I was used to operating that way.
Right. So basically, you're not just like a single person. You're basically the head of the household, and now you have to switch it back over.
Yeah. And then, and I mean, in certain things, I just kind of let go altogether. You know, like we fussed for a long time about who was supposed to take out the trash. And I'm like, well, you're going to, at that time, you know, I was pregnant, you know, and everything. I was only a couple of months pregnant, and I was sick a lot the first few months, and I would wait for him. You know, of course, like he was saying, he was gone at sometimes 12 hours at least a day.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's the trash needs to go out, and I get the bags together, and I'm waiting for him to come home so he could take it out. And he's like, I just walked in the door. And you waited for me to come home all day so I could take out the trash. He's like, you could have been took it out. And I'm like, but. I thought you were gonna, you know, you.
Right, this is
to do
part
that.
Of your belief system, I guess.
Right.
You know, clearly, you guys are gonna have to come back on the show. I guess this series is gonna have at least 3-4 shows with you guys alone because you're just giving out all this information.
Yeah.
but we're gonna definitely get into that whole belief system too about marriage because right now, just information about the things that you need to do and the things that you need to think about. We didn't really discuss the whole bonding period. We talked about it a little bit, but I think it is more important that you were able to tell individuals these are the things that you really need to be thinking
mm-hmm.
about before
yeah.
you even walk
I mean,
down
for,
the aisle.
For us, a lot of the bonding happened once he got out. Like the serious, like, you know, that kind of honeymoon phase that a lot of newlyweds get,
mm-hmm.
we didn't really get it until after he was discharged.
Mm.
You know, so it's kind of flip-flop, you know, just because of, you know, of our situation, so.
Right. Guys, I hate to really, you know, stop the show. I'm not even going to stop because I still want you guys to give your 5 pieces of advice, but if you can believe it, we're like an hour and a half in.
Really? Wow.
Once we all start talking, I'm telling you, you guys are just, awesome. And the show always goes over an hour, so I'm really not surprised because it's really important information. But let's get you guys started on giving your 5 pieces of advice. We'll shut it down for tonight, and then we'll make a plan for you guys to come back. Maybe I can actually get a couple of other individuals who spent more time in or who are older so that, you know, we can all have like kind of a round table on
right.
the show. To hear all the different opinions, because it really is. I can't wait for my niece to listen to it because I think she's in the sub right now,
mm-hmm.
so I'm not sure she can hear it.
Oh, okay.
But I know
gotcha.
That she and her mom and everybody's gonna listen to it. So let's go ahead. Let's get started with your 5 pieces of advice for individuals who are married in the military.
Well, I wrote mine down, so I'm gonna go ahead and.
Go for it.
Go for it.
I'm not shocked.
Okay. Well, and everything that I wrote down I've already said, but the first thing is that whether you're the soldier or the spouse, just realize that when you raise your right hand and sign your name, you are property of.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, the things that you want to do, the things that you're used to doing, the things that you want to do as a married couple, you're property of them, period. The second thing is that it all depends, as far as your marriage is concerned and the things you'll be able to do and the quality of your life. My second thing is it all depends on your job, your rank, your field, and your duty station. You can have the greatest experience, like a Fort Sam Houston or a Fort Jackson in South Carolina, or you can be in a hellhole like Fort Drum, Fort Bragg, or Fort Hood. You know, that's the reality of it. But if you're a doctor or a lawyer or something like that in the field, you can have a pretty good military career depending on where you are. If you infantry, good luck. The third thing I said was research before, during, and after. Find out the best thing that you can do for yourself personally as a soldier and for your family during your career and definitely when you get out, because regardless of whether you spend 20 years plus or not, at some point in time you're going to depart from the military. So you have to have a good exit strategy. That will save you a lot of headaches and heartaches. Next is keep a record of everything.
Oh, that's a good one. Keep a record of everything.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget and don't be afraid to go to a doctor. There's ways that you can get money later on. A lot of people, they have pride complexes and stuff like that. They don't want to go, and they let other people get into their head. But you have to realize that life is cumulative. Mm-hmm. So things that don't bother you at 25, all of a sudden you're 45, and those things are bothering you. And so now you try to go back, and you didn't get anything documented. So document everything, promotions, everything that you've ever had, good, bad, or ugly. Get a documentation of it. And have, like my wife has an important documents file, drawer, action thing going on. Mm-hmm. If it's important, it goes in there. So invest in one. Lastly, I would say set yourself up for success before doing and after. If they're going to pimp you, pimp them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even your spouse, there's education assistance that your spouse can get while you're in. So they'll pay for your spouse to go to school. They won't pay you to go. I mean, they won't give you extra cash. But your spouse, if your spouse doesn't have an education or if they're trying to continue their education, shoot, pimp the system. If you get a free education on the government dime, not the government, the government. If you get free education on government dime and you the spouse, you ain't even a soldier. If you can get that, why not?
I love it. I'm so glad you're saying that. Yeah. Yeah.
Those are my vitamins for today. Take them and be well.
Okay. All right, Dr. Reed. Come on, Sheree, before he starts again, because I hear he's not done. Clearly, he's not done.
Okay. For me, I would say number one is communication, like he was talking about those tough conversations. You have to have a good system of communicating before you even, you know, sign on that dotted line. Having a clear understanding of what's gonna happen, what's going on, who's gonna do what, you know, having communication can make or break, of course, any marriage, military or not. But it weighs so much heavier in the military, you know, situation. So communication is number one. Number two, I would say you have to have that understanding that as the spouse, the military, the spouse, the dependent, that you are not first. You can have some moments where they'll say, okay, we'll allow you to do this, but everything has to be approved. They had to approve paternity leave when I had my daughter. There's no, I want to take a day off. Everything has to be approved. So you have to get, you know, permission for everything. So, you know, as the spouse, you're not number one. That's maybe a tough pill to swallow, but you're not number one. The military is number one, and you are number two. Number three, I would say get legally, be in a position where you can handle things. I mean, if something happens to your spouse or anything, and you need to handle it their way or they're not there, that power of attorney, I promise you, it put me in such a great position. I was light years ahead of a lot of military spouses who were there, who mm-hmm. were trying to figure it out. You know, of course, the military, you know, they kind of gave temporary solutions.
Mm-hmm.
But I was able to, you know, just have a better setup and create a better atmosphere ahead of time, because I was able, you know, I was able to handle a lot of legalities that a lot of people weren't. So being able to handle, you know, get legal stuff handled was imperative. So I would say, yes, please get that power of attorney. You don't have to use it all the time. Just whenever you need it, you need to be able to pull that out. They do expire, so you do have to get it renewed.
Mm-hmm.
I think they expire like once a year or something like that. So
mm-hmm.
you do have
mm-hmm.
to get another one. Have a good support system. If you're married, you need a good married, you know, couple or something like that to that's going to have your best interest in mind, that, you know, has a little experience under their belt, where they can advise you, you know, accordingly. That's, you know, that's going to put you guys in a better position.
Mm-hmm.
There's with the military, there's a lot of single people who just, you know, going for broke every day. And they're definitely not the people that you want to, you know, be going to as far as, you know, seeking advice as a married person.
Mm-hmm.
So you really do. You need a good support, you know, system, whether it's decisions, whether it's emotional, whether it's a confidant. You know, you need a really good couple that is going to be able to encourage you and be a good example.
Mm-hmm.
And last one, I say plan. You have to be prepared to plan, you know, to come up with things at the drop of a hat. There's no, you know, waiting period. There's no grace period all the time. You're not always going to be granted that. You know, whatever random situations, I mean, a lot of random stuff happened to us. But if that happens to be you, you know, you have to be able to, you know, to think quickly and make decisions. So sometimes you may need to plan that out beforehand during that time, you know, of communication. Okay, well, if this happens, then what? If we don't do that, then what about this? You know, have a backup, have a plan B and a C and a D so that you're not scrambling and trying to figure it out. I mean, if something happens last minute, then, you know, okay, it happens last minute, but, you know, be prepared that you're going to have to come up with a strategy sometimes when, and it may throw you for a loop, but that's just kind of, you know, the way it goes sometimes. So planning and being on your toes about that, about, okay, I don't know, you know, how things are going to go today. You just don't know. There can be a lot of uncertainties in the military. Some days it can be fine, but like I said, you just don't know. So you have to be prepared for the uncertainties and have your mind ready that, okay, at any time I may need to do this or we may need to do that, and let's have a plan in the event that, you know, crazy circumstances happen. So.
Mhm, mhm, mhm.
Yeah.
That's a lot to digest. But very, like I said before, very pertinent information. I'm so glad, so very happy that you guys came on the show. You really made my week, honestly. With all the time, I feel like I went through a class or something. I just went through a class, and I'm not even in the military, and I don't, as far as I know, I don't plan on marrying anybody in the military.
Yeah, it can be a totally different world, you know, the military life as opposed to civilian life. It can be, it's a whole different ball of wax. You know, like he said, especially depending on what your job is and where you are, where you're stationed, it's, you know, all the, you know, things that apply to civilian life, you can just X all them out. You're going to get a whole different set of, you know, of rules, of protocol, and, you know, a way of living, a way of operating. It can be totally different.
Yeah,
it
sounds like an
totally
education in itself. It sounds like you
mm-hmm.
guys really had to, you guys are sharing the education that you learn.
We learn hard knocks.
Exactly. Y'all need to set up next to some recruiters somewhere and teach them.
Telling the truth. Telling the truth.
But I definitely want to thank Dr. A.J. Reed and Dr. Mrs., or rather Mrs., Sherita Reed. If you want to know more about this couple, I urge you to visit her page, which I'm going to post up on Facebook for anyone to go and like and find out more about them. It's Sophisticates Handbags and Apparel. Please stop by this page and like it. Look at some of the merchandise. You may see something you want to purchase. If you want to know more about this couple, you'll be able to listen to the archive again. And I do plan on having the back on. You guys have to just go ahead and agree that you're going to come back on, right?
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Oh. He's like, yeah, okay. Yeah,
he's like, okay.
God, I got plenty of information to give you. No problem. And we're going to get ready to go ahead and say good night to you all. It was an absolutely wonderful show. If you want to join us on Facebook, you can go to www.facebook.com/bridaltribe. Visit the magazine page. We do have a magazine coming out, by the way, which should be launching this week. Well, it'll be full of all of these things that we discussed tonight from married couples. It's a magazine about love, fun, beauty, weddings, and marriage. You kind of get the whole thing wrapped up in one. And I hope that you all will subscribe once we go ahead and launch. But until then, visit our magazine page again, www.facebook.com/bridaltribe, the magazine page, and you can see all the wonderful things that we post there. And if you choose to, you can join us for Tuesday, Tuesday BT. You know, we've got a lot of people that come just to see the fashion, but it's a lot of fun. I just want to go ahead and say goodnight to you all. Thank you all for your support again and for listening in. We are dedicated to love, and we hope that you are too. Good night, everybody.